Everyone, thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. You're listening to episode 8 of Postmodern Realities, and I'm Melanie Cogdell, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Richard J. Papard, who is a medical doctor and a board-certified oral and maxillofacial surgeon practicing in Michigan. He also has an earned MA in Christian apologetics from Biola University and is a speaker for the Life Training Institute. In 2015, in the volume 38, number 4 issue of the Christian Research Journal, Rich wrote an article for our Viewpoint column. Viewpoint addresses relevant contemporary issues in discernment and apologetics from a particular perspective that's not usually shared by all evangelicals. We hope that readers thinking on Viewpoint issues will be stimulated and enhanced whether or not readers end up agreeing with the author. Rich's Viewpoint article is called Modesty, Objectivism, and Human Value, and it's available free online at equip.org. Rich, it's good to have you on.
Oh, thank you so much, Melanie. It's a pleasure to be on.
Well, it seems like there's a lot of blogging going on in the Christian blogosphere regarding modesty. So what message do we send to both young men and women when we treat a woman's body fearfully or as something bad?
Yeah, oftentimes is when we talk about modesty in Christianity, we speak about just a fear of a man seeing a woman's body and therefore falling into lust. And I think the message that we send, first of all, to our young women is that their body is somehow inherently shameful and so powerful that they're able to cause a man to sin simply by showing it, by revealing it. And the only way that we can prevent that from happening, of course, is to either covering herself up and to remove all shape that she has. And that's the way that, but she is created in a way that is somehow inherently sinful simply by the way that her body is. And I think the idea, too, that we give the opinion that men, in order to be spiritual, have to be afraid of a woman's body, that any idea of glancing at one to either look away or to do whatever you can to avoid seeing skin is the right thing to do and, in fact, makes you more spiritual. And I think that's problematic in a number of different ways.
Well, what about dress codes? I know there's a lot of dress codes at schools that, you know, skirts have to be so many inches from the knee and so forth. What are situations in which you think a dress code is appropriate?
Yeah, well, I think dress codes themselves depends on the reason why they're in there. I mean, I'm in my office right now, and we have a dress code. I'm wearing scrubs, and my staff around me is all wearing scrubs, and it's certainly appropriate for that to happen. If any of my my staff, or certainly myself, came in with a swimsuit on, that would not be appropriate. And so, you know, as an example, that's the reason why dress codes are reasonable. I do think there's reasons why schools should have some uniformity in their dress codes. The problem, I think, is it becomes problematic when you imply that in order not to be objectified, in order for men in general and women also to be able to concentrate, that you have to abide by these certain made-up standards. And when we do that, what we do is we give, once again, women the message that they have to dress a certain way in order to not be objectified and not be stared at and not be valued. And I think that's very, very problematic. And I think in some ways, Melanie, we've lost our common sense. There's an appropriate to dress that we kind of come to the table with. A situation that I remarked, I probably in the midst of more young women showing skin, was at the starting line of a marathon that I ran last year. When it was 75 degrees out and running 26 miles, I think it was entirely appropriate for women around me to dress that way. So the idea that we just have these standards that we try to avoid looking at skin is just the wrong way of seeing each other.
What about items of clothing? Are they in and of themselves sinful? like yoga pants. There's been a lot written on blogs about yoga pants or bikinis. I know there was even some legislation recently of banning yoga pants.
Yeah, that's it. To me, once again, it's just a lack of common sense that we have. Yoga pants are interesting, too, because oftentimes when we talk about modesty, we talk about covering up skin. And, you know, leggings or yoga pants covers up skin, but now it's the shape, the mere shape that we see can cause a man to sin. I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense for us to just claim that an item of clothing in and of itself can be inherently sinful, and wearing an item of clothing can be inherently sinful. I think it depends on the circumstance, and just to say that you are a more spiritual person, or that you love Christ more, or you love your fellow brothers and sisters more by avoiding certain layers of clothing is unwise and just not very smart. As far as bikinis go, and somebody made a point once, I thought this was interesting, that in order to be modest, the idea of modesty is to not put undue attention on yourself. I'm from Michigan. You're from, I know you spent a lot of time in Southern California. I would argue that if you walk along a beach in Southern California completely dressed head to toe, you are going to have far more attention placed on you than you would if you walked in a bikini. So, yeah, I think there's areas for individual discernment, but the idea of taking items of clothing and just painting with such a broad brush, stating that this is sinful in all circumstances, is simply wrong.
Well, I know in today's culture, a lot of young women struggle with eating disorders. And, you know, how does our attitude regarding modesty affect how people view their bodies? I feel like in today's day and age with social media and just the internet, that women are more objectified. So how does this affected by the language you use to describe a modest dress? In other words, you're not covering your private areas or something to that effect.
Yeah, certainly in the world, women are valued, and all of us in many ways, but especially women are valued predominantly, it seems, by the way that they look. And you're right, in the age of social media, in the age of Instagram and selfies, that how we look is oftentimes how we assert value on our young women. And that's a message that they get over and over and over again. Now, in the church, I think ideally, when you go to church, church should be the one place where women, young women, and everyone feel safe and valued regardless of the way that they look. And I would also say regardless of the way that they dress. But the opposite in many ways is true. If a young woman goes into a youth group, for instance, and she is wearing shorts that are too small, or she is wearing bearing her shoulders, oftentimes they'll be given this large sweatshirt that they'll be wearing in order to cover themselves up, in order to not distract the boys in the group. And the message then we sent is similar to the one the world sends, in that you are valued based on the way that you look, not just positively if you happen to have a good figure, but also negatively, that if you are showing so much that we have to cover you up because how you are is inherently sinful. Also, there have been a lot of examples. You talk about the blog, if you're saying that, you know, we describe some dresses, we describe them as dressing cheaply. Or there was once a quote that I have here that talked about how that you're advertising something that's not on sale. You know, the idea of objectifying another human being is not to treat them like they're inherently valuable, to instead put some kind of price, treat them like they're just a mere object. And by using terms like dressing cheaply or saying that you're on sale, we are doing the exact same thing that the world does. We're valuing our young women as objects that we can even talk about buying and selling. And that, we have to do much better than that. The church needs to be the place in which we are valued regardless of how we look.
And does this whole issue also affect women in terms of body type? It seems to me that the modesty issue might be focusing on people with certain body types and making other women with different body types feel like they're less than attractive.
Well, yes. And once again, as the world looks at the attractive form of a woman and values that, how are to we treat those that don't have the perfect body type, or how the world sees the perfect body type. I think our goal needs to be to value everyone regardless of what our body looks like. You know, I think we have we need a stronger theology of the body and what the role is of our body in everyday life. Because the attitude that we send, both in being afraid of women who are dressed quote-unquote inappropriately, or to the point that we're, you know, putting baggy clothes on them, or assuming that men are more spiritual by avoiding all images of women dressed a certain way, is a way that we end up objectifying them as much in the church as they get objectified outside.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Dr. Richard J. Papard, who wrote a viewpoint article for the Volume 38, Number 4 issue in 2015 of the Christian Research Journal. It's called Modesty, Objectivism, and Human Value. This article is available free online at equip.org. Rich also has a forthcoming article on sexual purity that you don't want to miss, so please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is $39.50, and to subscribe online, visit equip.org. We were just talking about objectivism and just this idea of women being objectified in culture. So how do you think that modesty teachings in the church might subtly teach this same view?
Well, I think the modesty teachings in the church treat young women not as inherently valuable. We treat young women as essentially inherent temptresses that we have to be fearful and careful of. The messages that we give our young men in the church are similar, that you're not to look at a young woman as someone who has intrinsic value, someone who is more amazingly complex than you can imagine, but you view her and see her and in many ways value her as how she appears. And if she appears in a way that caused you to be attracted sexually, then you either look away or you ask someone to have her cover up. You know, that's how, unfortunately, we can treat women as objects, even in the church. And I do think, especially as when we have these man-made standards that women are supposed to feel obligated to conform to, simply to look like one another and to avoid others, people looking at them non-objectively, we also objectify women in that very same way.
So do you think these modesty teachings also objectify the way we view men? I mean, how do they affect how we see men?
Yeah, well, I think the effect of these modesty teachings on men are oftentimes understated. And I'm very interested in kind of evaluating the effects that this has on men. You know, first of all, as human beings that have been touched with the Holy Spirit, then we have to realize that we are moral agents, and we cannot look at anybody else for the cause of our sin. In terms of men and women who sometimes also struggle with lust, the problem is not what we see, the problem is what's inside of our heart. And instead, we teach young men, young boys, that the best guard, the best answer to this problem with lust inside of us is to not look or to avoid seeing. Essentially, blindness is the best way for us to avoid this sin. And I don't think that's the right way of seeing that. And so boys are growing up thinking that basically they're almost powerless to handle the viewing of a young woman. And therefore, you know, even though they may struggle with lust in their hearts, in some way it would be very, very nice if the women around could conform themselves in order to fix this problem that we have inside of us. And a couple examples. A book by C.J. Mahaney talked about the testimony of a young man walking across a college campus, and he stated that he's just constantly bombarded with these images every single time he walks across a campus, and he needs to pray to himself or sing hymns or look down or sometimes do a combination of all these things just to make it through. Another book by Martha Peace talked about modesty in terms of like a bully, that having a young woman who steps in front of a man who sees something, her attractiveness, is like a bully that is constantly at him, causing pain, and he's got to walk through life fearful of seeing something like that. I think when we constantly tell men this message, they grow up with the idea that they cannot help themselves from lusting after women. And in fact, that it's in some ways the responsibility of those around them to have them to deal with this issue that's deep within their heart. And I don't think that's correct. And I think that's going to be very damaging to a young man as he develops.
You mentioned the example of the college students. Do you think that these current teachings in the church on modesty have been successful in preventing men from lust? I mean, you know, he's going to have to walk across campus every day for 4 years. I mean, so what is the most effective, if it hasn't, what is the most effective weapon against objectifying women in lust?
Yeah, well, certainly I think the answer to the first question, the idea that avoidance is really the best way of handling lust, is certainly not true. Mere avoidance is actually incapable of changing our heart. If we think that we can just avoid this sin and avoid lustful thoughts by shutting ourselves up or closing our eyes as much as we can, that's not effective. And I would certainly say that when we look at the church today and look at the problems that we have with pornography and look at the problems that we have with illicit sexual activity outside of marriage, these problems have not gone away, and frankly, they have not been particularly helped, I think, by this attitude of simply dressing in a way that we can cover up all of our women. I think if we covered up all the women with loose-fitting burkas or blankets, we would still have the problem of lust. So we have to look somewhere else to see what is the real problem and how can we treat it. I would argue that the correct answer to the lust problem is not avoidance, but instead to reevaluate, to learn how to recognize that when you are looking at someone else, that they are intrinsically valuable regardless of what they are wearing. And they are intrinsically valuable whether they're sexually attractive to you or they're not sexually attractive to you. That they are a person made in God's image, and therefore they have value that does not change regardless of what they are wearing or how they are covering themselves up. They are valued based on who created them. And I think recognizing that and continuing to teach that regardless of what someone wears, it is not what makes them valuable. It is the fact that they're made in the image. And also that, you know, when we look at someone and we see the way they're dressed and the first impression, we sort of just focus on the way they look. But the truth is, the person that you are looking at is far more interesting, far more unique, and far more complex than you would ever know. And being interested in knowing more about them in that way is an important aspect, even if they happen to be wearing a bikini at the time that you meet them.
So how should we react, and I would say men and women, because you talked about just the increase of pornography, and I think women, because they also do struggle with viewing pornography as well, that they also have been trained to have a visual aspect or visual reaction to people that they see. How should both men and women react or do when they encounter somebody of the opposite sex who is showing a significant amount of skin or something that we would say would be enticing, whether it's bare shoulders or a guy shirtless or something like that?
Yeah, I think especially when you're hearing about pornography, it's important to take a step back and see what's the main heart problem with pornography. And I would argue that when you're viewing pornography, amongst other bad things too, that you are using the image of someone else for your own gratification. That instead of looking at them as a child of God, as someone that God made and is valued for that reason, you're looking at them as a mere tool for your own self and for your own desires. And that's what lust is. That's what when we look at somebody in a predatory way in order for us to be gratified. And that's the main problem. So that when we encounter somebody, I think, that is dressed in a so-called immodest way, that is showing a little extra skin, I think refocusing on the fact that this is a human being, this is someone that does not exist for my gratification. This is someone that God made and is valuable in that way, is an important part of then realizing that they are far more than what they are looking at. I know that many, both men and women, struggle with pornography. But I think reevaluating in that way, that this is a person who's intrinsically valuable, a child of God, and should not be used as a mere means for me, is a way to help combat that sin and help combat looking at people the wrong way and in wrongful, lustfully ways.
How would you answer those Christians who would point you to 1 Timothy 2:9 that talks about women dressing modestly and say that verse means that if we don't dress modestly, then we're causing our brother to stumble?
Yeah, I think if you look at that verse in context, when they use the word modestly, we assume that it's the modern way that we talk about, you know, covering ourselves up. But I believe that verse more speaks to the idea that against pride, that we should dress in a way, in a humble way, not in a way that brings attention to ourselves and our status in life and the way that we are in our financial acumen, but that we should all dress in a way that brings us together as opposed to sets us apart. And I think that's the correct way of looking at that. So for that reason, I think saying that in order to be spiritual, that you have to use a certain uniform dressing in church, in saying that, you know, if you, as long as you cover up your shoulders and as long as you cover up your body parts in a certain way, that is a good indication that you're a spiritual person. That's wrong. You can dress from head to toe and show no skin or no body shape whatsoever, and still be immodest in the way that you are displaying yourself and showing yourself. So I think we need to be careful when we extrapolate that word to meaning all of a sudden, you know, we have to be extraordinarily careful when we walk in there. At the same time, I do think that there's a, in terms of thinking about theology of dress and theology of how God wants us to dress, that there is a celebration sometimes of looking good, of looking the best that you can, not in a way to entice other people, but just in the way to display yourself. I know even looking at it, it amazes me how people are interested in the fashions of award shows and why that is. And that's not generally done modestly, but done in a way that shows off our bodies in a way that it is, I think, is glorifying and not necessarily one that is that only unspiritual people do.
So would you say that there's a particular Christian standard of modesty for women?
I think the standard of modesty involves in what comes on in our hearts. I do not think, nor should we, advocate some kind of standard, some kind of list, legalistic list that we should check off in order to be, hey, if I just don't wear these things, then I am spiritual. I think that's wrong. I think that the idea is that we should be humble in our hearts, that we should do what we can to love one another, to respect one another, and to see each other as valuable regardless of the way that we look. Another thing, too, that we oftentimes, I say, we frequently don't know the circumstance that the other person is in that we see as dressing immodestly. Maybe this is a person who's wearing tight-fitting clothes because they can't afford new ones or are struggling with their weight. We don't know their circumstances. We don't know what's going on inside their hearts. And I think taking the time to treat them valuably, to learn and to be empathetic towards them is a better way to handle someone who is dressed in very, very tight-fitting clothes than simply putting on a large sweatshirt that doesn't fit them.
So finally, how would you answer those people who would link modesty to the spiritual maturity of women? In other words, if we need to like look at our clothes and say, well, what do our clothes say about our spiritual condition or our hearts or our commitment to the gospel?
Well, certainly we can look at historically that our clothing has changed significantly from the time of Christ. So the idea of being able to objectively look at what someone is wearing in saying that they are spiritual versus this other person who is not spiritual for what they're wearing is a big mistake that we can make and we tend to make. I don't think the position of our clothing is necessarily or should be considered an indication of our spiritual growth. At the same time, I do think that when we clothe ourselves, that we should consider others in mind when we do that, both in terms of not making ourselves out, not bringing undue attention on ourselves, and understanding each other. But the idea of saying there's some kind of Christian standard of clothing, some almost Christian uniform that we are expected to wear, a skirt length which is so long, the fact that we bare our shoulders or not bare our shoulders, that's extremely problematic. And I don't think that's the right way of looking at things. And once again, it's another example of objectification. Our spiritual growth is what's in our hearts and cannot be viewed with our eyes alone. And so when we put out these standards and think that we can judge someone's heart and judge where someone is in their walk with Christ based on what they're wearing, you know, as I've said before, if it only were that easy, it's one thing to change your clothes. It's another thing to really look inside what's going on inside your heart.
Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for Rich. So, Rich, burgers and fries or hot dogs and potato chips?
Oh, definitely burgers and fries.
What's your favorite social media platform?
I'm probably on Facebook more often than anything, but I do a lot of Twitter, too. I write on Facebook. I read Twitter mostly.
And you have a middle initial J. What's your middle name?
It is Joseph.
And do you iron your own clothes?
No. I'm not sure what an iron looks like, actually.
And why did you pick oral surgery as your medical specialty?
Oh, that's kind of a long answer, but I'll make it somewhat short. My father was a family dentist growing up, and I actually saw, as a strange kid in high school, he let me see an oral surgeon work one day. And I guess I was a strange kid because I thought the idea of putting people to sleep and doing surgery on them as a way to make a living was a neat thing to do.
Well, thanks, Rich, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you so much, Melanie, for the invitation.
Rich has a forthcoming article on sexual purity that you will want to read. A 6-issue subscription to the journal is $39.50, and to subscribe online, visit equip.org. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Anagraff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure you also go to equip.org, where you can download our free smartphone app on which you can listen to the Bible Answer Man broadcast live, listen to previous broadcasts, make a donation, and subscribe to the Christian Research Journal.